Buzz Fightions!
The fourth.
Hello, America, how are you? Are you having a beverage? Is it delicious? Hello, my name is Jeff Heatherly.
I'm Nick Melton.
Welcome to the Original Unoriginal Podcast. Mr. Melton, I've been having some fucked up dreams lately.
I heard.
Yeah. I was telling Mr. Melton about a dream I had last night, or early this morning, more like, in which the two main factors I remember are that I had fucked up teeth and had a constant state of diarrhea.
Those are weird things to have in combinations in dreams.
I don't know what that was about. I just remember the stains on my legs and the weird teeth. But I also had another dream, because you seemed utterly discomforted by all this. Another dream in which I was devoured alive by an orange whale.
I remember that it was orange.
Yes, it was an orange whale. I'm down there in the water of the ocean, whatever ocean it may be, and I'm, like, backed up against a coral reef. Not really, like, I'm not, like, it, most of my dreams open in medias res, okay? They never really have an opening to the story. It just kind of happens, right? So I'm down there, and I'm, like, backed up against this coral reef, and I'm just kind of hanging out. I'm not even sure I had, like, you know, an oxygen tank, I think. Maybe I could breathe underwater. I don't think that's an important detail. I was down there. That's the point.
I've had dreams where I could breathe underwater.
But what I'm saying is it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't part of the discovery of the dream. It was just like, this is the way it is.
Well, yeah, that's what it was. Normally I'm in swimming pools when I can discover I can breathe underwater. I'm like, yes!
But saying I'm saying I didn't discover it. I'm saying it was just a thing that was. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, but in dreams, when you discover something, it's not like a moment of eureka like you have when you're awake. It's just sort of like a progression of what's going on, and you just accept it immediately and move on.
I guess that's what it was.
You don't like really dwell on it. So in that sense, it's less a discovery than just sort of like, oh yeah, look at me, I can breathe. Let's keep going. You know.
Right. Anyway, right after I stopped being Aquaman.
Right.
Let's stop that. I'm backed up against this coral reef, and all of a sudden I just see this large orange phallic symbol come flying at me.
I said it wasn't flying at you.
I mean, it wasn't flying. It was kind of just slowly making its way, coasting.
Trundling through the water.
It wasn't, like, coming at me with intent. It wasn't intending to eat me. It just was really going forward and had no intention of stopping. And then once it made it to me, like, it sort of pinned me to the wall with its nose. And then my right arm went in its mouth.
And it didn't come back,
and it just proceeded to devour me.
I had a dream once where I was being eaten by a shark.
You told me that earlier.
Actually, no, I wasn't eaten by a shark, I was just bitten by a shark. I didn't feel anything, and afterwards I was running around going, ah, I've been bitten, ah!
So that was it?
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah.
That was my shark dream.
Was it a regular shark?
Yeah, it was just a shark.
Okay. Was an orange or anything?
It wasn't orange, it was just a shark.
An orange whale, sir.
I don't think such a whale exists.
Yeah.
Except in dreams.
Yeah. Dreams. You know, I felt like, I thought that part of the conversation would go on longer, but then I started thinking, now I remember why we started talking about that, because I was talking about, like, the unknown. We just, a couple days ago, went and swimming in a pond with my dear cousin, 70 C. Kernison.
Meanie Monkeys and Junkie Junkies.
Subscribe now. Thank you for joining me, Nick. And our good friend Mr. David Allgood and his Virginia folk. And we went to this pond that was, from what we understand, a man-made pond, right?
Mm-hmm.
Had been there for so many years, and although it was creek-fed on occasion, or something to that effect.
That might actually be why they couldn't find a creek. If it was a man-made pond. I don't know if they found a creek or not. I don't think that's really important.
I heard someone say it was creek-fed. Anyway, the point is, I have, for the better part of my life, had issues with, like, you know, not being able to see the bottom of water. You know, I don't like swimming in something when I can't see what's coming up at me. If anything is coming up at me, you know. And, like, I don't like that. And what really brought this on, and what I think actually brought on this dream with the orange whale, is, as we were getting out of the pond, Nick can attest to this, all of a sudden I just was like, holy shit! Because something poked me in the stomach, wasn't human, and it wasn't part of the floats we were using. It was a sharp, string-like thing that just bopped into my stomach and fucked off. You know? And even though it fucked off, it still messed with me quite a bit. And I guess it stuck with me, because now I'm having this dream where there's this orange whale just slowly coming at me, and I'm just kind of chilling and letting it eat me. So what's that about?
I don't know. I'm not good at dream analysis.
We used to have that book. I don't know if you remember, in the early 90s, they came out with that book, a 10,000 Dreams Defined or something, or whatever it's called.
I've never heard of that.
It's a big red book, and it has, like, you have to, like, look for certain terms. Like, I would look up whale, and then it would tell me what a whale signifies.
Death.
A lot of things did signify death. I don't want to think about that, because I'm very, you know, afraid of death. We are drinking pre-mixed White Russians again.
But this time, they're by Kahlua.
They're the real shit, and they are fucking...
I feel like we should be watching The Big Lebowski right now.
No, we don't need to be that cliched, okay?
Hey, I am that cliche.
The point is, these are delicious, and I gotta tell you, I just came up with that on my own spot. You like that?
I do.
Delicious. So good! The ocean, though, Nick. I've been thinking about the ocean, and it's so big, Nick. It's so damn big, you know? I'm not just talking about my penis, Nick, okay? For once, I am not talking about my penis. Okay?
Well, I know. You're talking about the ocean.
And it's huge, but you kept looking at me like, he's talking about his penis. You know me all too well, Nick.
That's what happens when people hang out a lot.
It's true. You start to notice when they're talking about their dicks. Anyway, the ocean. I mean, it's so vast, and we know so little about it, and there's that, and I told you, like, there's even that scene in Episode 1, the shittiest of the Star Wars movies, though it may be, there's that scene at the very beginning when they go down to the Gungan place.
Naboo. They're on Naboo.
They're on Naboo.
They're going, they go to the Gungan city.
Okay, you're getting snooty about Episode 1?
I am a staunch defender of Episode 1, but not for its quality.
For what?
For the fact that it is not as bad. Well, actually, it is, I guess, for its quality. I don't think it's as terrible a movie as everyone else thinks.
No, I don't think I actively hate any of them. I'm just, you know, as a nerd, I think I'm kind of... I have to. I'm required to hate on Episode 1.
Star Wars has been my favorite film series since I was 4, so... You'd think that would make me staunchly oppose anything that was not as good as the original movies, but... Instead, it's just made me defend everything. So
clearly.
But anyway, you were talking about the ocean.
The ocean. Well, they're in that submarine with Jar Jar, and Jar Jar's being an annoying racial stereotype, and...
It's called a bongo.
What the hell?
I know what the submarine is called, and it's called a bongo.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Jar... I thought you were talking about the racial stereotype. I was like, is there a new racial slur I haven't heard of called bongo?
Oh, no, but if there were, it would be for what Jar Jar is.
Clearly.
He's like a... What is he supposed to be anyway? Like an African American Pacific Islander? Like,
I think they said he was supposed to be Jamaican.
Whatever.
It's not important. Fuck Jar Jar. The point is this:
he didn't bother me either. It's the kid that bothers me.
No. I feel you. You know, this is tense. No, it's intense. You stupid little prick. Tense is not a word you use in that moment.
Maybe it was tense.
Well, maybe Jake Lloyd's a terrible actor.
That too.
Okay.
What's he been in since
nothing.
Star Wars? Nothing?
Absolutely nothing. And I'll tell you what, but here's one thing I gotta give him credit for. I saw this, like, documentary about Star Wars a couple months back, and he totally cops the fact that he was a terrible actor.
Okay, I kinda like him.
Yeah, I was like, thank you! You're right there with us.
In his defense, he was a child, and children generally aren't good actors to begin with.
Yeah.
But George Lucas is not the best of directors.
No, it's not.
He's a great storyteller.
Is he?
Yeah, I think Star Wars is a great story. But he's not the best with writing dialogue or dealing with actors. I think he'd be better just, like, writing stories for movies.
Right.
And having somebody else direct them, because everyone knows the best Star Wars movies are the ones that he didn't direct.
It's true. Empire?
Yeah, and I don't think he wrote the screenplays for those either.
I mean, yeah.
There's a lesson to be learned from that.
Empire. Would you agree that Empire's the best?
Absolutely.
Good.
For a long time, I used to like Return of the Jedi the best.
I really don't care for Return of the Jedi.
Are you going to say it's because of the Ewoks?
It's not because of the Ewoks.
Good, although
they don't help.
Why does no one like the Ewoks? No one has explained this to me satisfactorily.
It's not like... The thing I always hear, I can't believe... We were talking about the ocean day.
We'll get back. We'll get back. Mind. Yeah.
But anyway, no. The reason why people take so much issue with the Ewoks is just because, like... Probably the best way to put it is this, and I heard someone say this once, I forget who, we'll just go with this. Someone said, you know, after two movies of, like, the Empire and their various modes of killing being insurmountable and only taken down by somewhat equal, you know, forces, we have AT-AT walkers being taken down by, like, vines and rocks. And people took issue with that, apparently. That's one thing I've heard.
Well,
I don't care, but I'm just saying they did.
The thing that I've always held to the belief of is that after two movies of icky monsters and gross-looking aliens and these really alien... There's not one species in the entire galaxy that doesn't look cute.
You take issue with Admiral Akbar?
Oh! He's from the planet Calamari.
It's a trap!
That is really what his planet is called, Calamari.
I know.
My opinion was, you know what? The Empire, they can't hit the broadside of a barn. The stormtroopers are complete and utterly incompetent. And you know what? I do think that a big clumsy piece of technology could trip over a log on a forest planet. I really do.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm willing to suspend my disbelief for that. I'm not sure that throwing some stones at a stormtrooper's helmet is going to destroy stormtroopers.
Right.
But I think that you can disable giant hunks of machinery by using agility and logs and shit to your advantage. I'm not sure that shooting arrows at a stormtrooper is going to take down a stormtrooper.
No. I think the other thing...
You get where I'm going with this.
I kind of do. The other thing, though, is when you consider, like... I think it's always going to be kind of cursed by the fact that it immediately had to follow Empire.
Yeah, Empire is so great.
Because, I mean, when you go from Empire with its amazingness to Jedi, which is, you know... For a final chapter or a presumed final chapter, it's kind of a... It kind of sucks. You know what I mean? Like, it's if you're into the final chapter of something, I mean, every ounce of what you put forth needs to be made of epic, you know?
Not necessarily. And let me explain why. And it's actually the prequels that have changed this movie. Before the prequels, you would have been right. But with the prequels, it becomes established that the entire six-arc movie series is not about Luke Skywalker and the Alliance and the Empire. The entire six-movie cycle is about Anakin.
Yeah.
So once you realize that the whole series is about Anakin, it doesn't really matter what the circumstances are anymore. It sort of becomes more about his character arc, and that movie is the total and utter redemption of Anakin Skywalker. And when you consider it from that light, I think that movie is not a qualified success. Because the whole series is about the fall and redemption of Anakin.
Right.
At the end of the movie, he is redeemed. That is where the story needed to go, and it goes there. Who cares if it has some Ewoks in it? I like the Ewoks. Anyway.
The ocean! I was going to keep going about the Ewoks, but yeah, let's move on back to the ocean. The ocean. We know so little about it, you know? I mean, it's out there, it's the majority of the Earth, but the truth of the matter is, we have not explored every inch of it. There are depths that we have not plunged into.
And this is where you were going to bring up the Star Wars scene.
Thank you, there we go. Because I was thinking about, and I was telling you about this earlier, but you weren't paying attention entirely, so I think I can tell you about it and still get a fresh reaction.
Right.
A couple of years ago, they discovered, and I mean, it's not just a couple of years ago, it's not even just this one time. I mean, I've heard of things like this happening all the time, where you'll hear about it, and they're like, you know, we just discovered the last living remnant of this crazy dinosaur shark, or whatever it is. It's always like this massive, million feet long shark or something, or a massive whale that's like as big as an ocean. You know, like, they always find these fucking huge ocean creatures that are apparently like relics of the prehistoric times that are still around, and they've just been hiding in the dark depths of the ocean. And the thing is, these things could, like, just pop up out of the water at any time, jaws open, and devour you with you just swimming on top.
They could not.
They could so do that.
They could not. Their body could not adjust to the pressure and temperature differences. They're trapped down there. They're not hiding down there. It's just they've been relegated down there due to pressure and, you know, the energy and heat that comes out of those volcanic vents. If they were to actually swim to the surface, they'd probably die. Because their body couldn't adapt to pressure changes.
So how do you explain that thing a couple years ago where near the surface, they discovered that living, like, weird gator shark thing I told you about. There was this shark gator thing, and it was, like, I want to say about 40 feet long.
Really? That long?
It was redonkulous. I gotta stop saying redonkulous. This is, like, the third time I've used it in an episode. It's getting Van Damdiculous.
I was really hoping you would say redonkulous
again. I didn't. I decided not to. Anyway, no. They discovered this like gator shark thing, and it was, I mean, maybe it wasn't 40 feet long, but it was pretty fucking long and huge. And like the basic physics, like, to look at it, and you might be able to find information about it online. It had the basic body shape of a shark, except that its front, like its face, if you will, was a bit longer and had kind of a snout to it.
Mm-hmm.
And its fin, its back fin, had that kind of fat, conical, gator-like shape to it that had the two, like, you know, fins on the end. And its skin was that thick, leathery, gator skin kind of thing. Huge thing. I don't remember what they ended up actually calling it. I'm calling it the gator shark because it's the best, like, layman's term for it. But they found it, and I'm just saying, like, they're discovering things like this every day. They are discovering these prehistoric, utterly huge sea creatures that are still out there, still under the water. Some are slowly making their way back up to the top, evolving maybe, you know, whatever it is, but they're still there. And who's to say I'm not just hanging out in the middle of the ocean like I ever would do that? That's the entire point of this conversation. If I'm ever just hanging out in the middle of the ocean, just kind of swimming up to the top on the surface, and all of a sudden this motherfucker comes out from the depths and just devours me whole, and I'm like, I'm dying and being chewed alive by a creature I've never heard of before. How fucked up would that be?
Why would you be hanging out in the middle of the ocean?
I love that's your first question. As I said, I don't know why I would be hanging out in the middle of the ocean, because that would never fucking happen.
But I mean, like, I guess. I mean, I don't hear that much about prehistoric creatures these days. I mean, the last big thing I knew of was the coelacanth.
You were talking about that earlier. What is that?
The coelacanth is a fish of some sort. It's not a gigantic fish. I mean, it's not tiny, but it's a moderate-sized fish, a couple feet long, I guess. And we always thought it was extinct, but they found a live one. It's either, like, South Africa or Japan.
Okay.
Like,
That's a really random thing,
but you get what I'm saying. Warmer waters.
Right.
Well, I guess around South Africa, we'd be getting down towards Antarctica, so maybe it's not that warm down there, but they found it floating around in an unlikely place, and they found live ones since, and now they're in, like, museums and aquariums. I'm like, oh, coelacanth. I mean, yeah, these things do exist, but I don't hear about them often enough to really worry about a megalodon swimming up from the depths and eating them.
I didn't even think about the megalodon. That motherfucker's waiting for us.
The megalodon...
He almost killed John Barrowman, sir!
What?
If John Barrowman can only survive the megalodon by the skin of his teeth, what chance do I have with my fat ass? All right.
I don't think that movie was a very accurate representation of megalodon.
It certainly wasn't. Oh, God. Oh, God.
It is a fantastic movie, though.
Mm-hmm.
If by fantastic you mean utterly terrifyingly bad.
Now, that's a situation, once again, where I'm like, Nick, you gotta love the terrible.
Oh, yeah, that movie was awesome. We saw it in a theater. It was amazing.
We did, with a bunch of drunk people.
Shark Attack 3 Megalodon is the name of the movie. Seek it out. It features the incomparable and gay John Barrowman.
Yes, of
saying,
Torchwood.
Saying the following line. You know, I'm pretty wired. Why don't I take you home and eat your pussy?
He's gay, Jeff.
And so are you, which made that delightful as well.
Yes. You proud homosexual motherfucker, you.
Yep. Ooh. Stopped being fella a long time ago, and now it's motherfucker.
I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. It makes me sound like more of a badass.
Yeah. He's a proud homosexual motherfucker. He'll whip out his six shooters and cut you down.
Among other things.
Yes, exactly. In this Western in which you're like the tough gay that frightens the town. You know,
I would love to see that movie.
The tough gay Western.
In the Western town, yeah. Fighting, what is he fighting?
Okay, well, hold on. What's his name? What's this guy's name?
Oh, shit. Cleve Vandersnoot.
Okay. Cleve Vandersnoot, the toughest gay in the Wild West.
Although not with a name like Vandersnoot.
Okay, so okay.
Well, no, we can keep him as Vandersnoot.
How about,
Johnson. Cleve Johnson.
Cleve Johnson?
Does a little better, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, and maybe he does cleave the Johnson from time to time, but
that only vaguely makes sense.
But anyway, Cleve Johnson, okay, toughest gay in the Old West. All right, tell me his story, Nick, as you spit out that ice cube.
Cleve Johnson, nee Vandersnoot. he was born in 200 log cabins.
What is that from?
Futurama.
Oh.
Lincoln. Robot Lincoln with multiple personalities.
Oh, okay.
He was born in 200 log
cabins. I was hoping we could just go completely on original material.
Oh, yeah. Well, he was born on a hog farm in Kentucky, and he escaped his evil drunk bank robber baron father for a life of justice on the old frontier. So he migrates to South Dakota, where he becomes the sheriff, but no one knows he sleeps with the Menzies. So
he's a pioneer of a million different sorts.
And into town rides that biggest bad of all big bads, a big bad...
Baddington.
who carries around pistols made of gold and contempt for all of humankind.
He carries contempt in a little wallet.
Yeah. and he... Big Bad Baddington's plan is to irradiate all the world's gold so that he will be richer than all the people.
Isn't that from Wild Wild West?
Actually, that's from Goldfinger.
Of course it is.
So, I don't know how he's going to go about irradiating all
I think the point is, we need to make a movie about the toughest gay in the Old West.
Yeah, such things exist. Not movies, but books.
Yeah.
I've seen them. They're really poorly written. I have a friend of mine who has them.
I'm trying to remember how we got here. About the toughest...
I really don't remember.
I don't either.
You just said you called me a proud homosexual...
motherfucker, and you said it was a tough... Yeah. White Russians. They are delicious.
They are.
We're going to need more ice in a minute.
We are.
If not now.
If not now. Well, I'm not done.
You're not done. I'll wait for you. What can we talk about in the interim?
Something that makes more sense than everything I just said.
Well, I mean, have we... I'm trying to think if I've, like, said all... The point of the ocean is scary.
I love water, though.
I mean, I love water, too. It's weird. You know, I've not gone into it on the air, and I'm still not going to, but I have reason to, you know... I've got a grudge against the ocean, and I will forever. But it's... The thing is, like, outside of that, like, I've always loved swimming. Loved going underwater. It's good stuff, you know? But the thing is, like, I've never been, since that day that we won't talk about on the air, I've never been, like, out on the open water and not known what was, you know, under me or ahead of me, you know. I've never been in that situation before, which is what makes the whole scenario of me just floating in the middle of everything, and then the Megalodon comes up and devours me even more ridiculous, because why the fuck would I just be out in the middle of the ocean just hanging out?
But, you know, I think that my original point was going to be, before, why were you out in the middle of the ocean? I don't think your fear is that founded, because if a creature like that were to still exist now, it would need massive food supply.
It's called the rest of the ocean, Nick.
Yes, it can just keep the rest of the ocean.
I'm saying it can just keep its big maw open and just, like, devour everything that floats into its mouth.
Oh, yes, it can survive on krill and little shrimp.
I think it could. If models can survive on crackers and oxygen.
A model is not 60 feet long. And who lives at the bottom of the ocean.
Are you sure? Have you met Tyra
That's
Banks?
That's where models live. Tyra Banks is a prehistoric creature who swam up from the depths of the ocean.
She totally is.
And transformed her lizard body into that of a creepy woman.
Well, I mean, there's that bit on Family Guy where, you know who I am, where I came from, how hard I had to work to get from where I was to where I am now! And then she turns into, like, this massive lizard and devours the chick and scuttles away. I'm sure I just blew out the speaker.
Delightful.
Jeff Headley as Tyra Banks. Yes.
Tyra Banks scares me a little bit.
She's a bit of a terrifying woman, and Joel McHale just helps point out what a terrifying woman she is every week on The Soup.
I love Joel McHale.
Me too.
He's a dreamy man.
You know, the Emmy nominations came out a couple days ago.
I didn't. Anything interesting?
The thing that's most interesting to everyone is the fact that The Tonight Show with Conan O'Brien was nominated for Best Variety Series.
Is it a variety series?
Technically, yes.
How? I mean, it's basically just a talk show at night.
It's late night talk reality variety program. I think that's the category. It's a really long, convoluted title. The point is, it was nominated against the likes of like Real Time with Bill Maher, Daily Show, Colbert, Saturday Night Live, and David Letterman.
So, in other words, you think they might have given him a nomination because of the whole Conan?
I don't know. It could be read in a number of ways. The one that I'm sure all the cynics are going to go straight to is the one where it's they nominated him just because of the press they're going to get for nominating him. Also, considering the fact that the Emmys are going to be telecast on NBC, which is kind of interesting. But to be fair, I also think that in those last few weeks where he knew he was about to go, I think he put out some of like the best television he's ever been a part of. You know, I think he really does have a claim over doing something pretty great.
I assume Jon Stewart and Colbert have won Emmys by now.
Oh yes,
I'd be surprised if Conan hadn't.
They've won, like, Conan's writers have won, I think, one Emmy at some point. But Colbert and Jon Stewart have won like best variety program, best writing, best host like a million times over now.
I remember when Colbert Nation first came on.
Colbert Report.
Oh yes, Colbert Report. Colbert Nation is the fan site.
Yeah, no, it's a real website.
It is.
It's the real website.
I'm a member on the Colbert Nation.
Somehow I'm not yet. I mean, you would think I would have been from the Jump Street, man, but it didn't happen.
Yeah, well, it was sophomore year of college for me, so it's
freshman year for me.
So I can sort of gauge that. Well, I remember because I was living in my sophomore dorm room, so it must have been sophomore year.
Right, right.
I don't think it came on earlier than that. But
started October of 2005.
Yes, then I would have been a sophomore. There we go.
Yeah, that went on forever.
I can't remember my own levels of college.
Yeah.
I can't speak right now.
There's also that, but the reason why I brought up the Emmys, though, is because we're talking about Joel McHale, and I was thinking about how Community wasn't nominated for anything.
I'm not surprised.
You should be. Although, to be fair, you haven't seen anything past the pilot.
Yeah, but, I mean, like, Community, I don't think is a show that has that big of a following.
You would be wrong.
Really?
That show is, like, such a huge hit with, like, the college kids, and it's just, like, genuinely beloved. It's been renewed for a second season. It's a big hit. It's, like, pretty much, like, it's been given kind of the same positioning and promotion and attitude as like My Name Is Earl when it was still on. Like it's the Thursday.
I never watched My Name Is Earl.
I did. I loved My Name Is Earl. Although I do hold it entirely responsible for ruining Jason Lee's ability to act.
It's kind of like Moonlighting, isn't it? No, it's about how Broadway ruined Matthew Broderick.
That was the exact comparison. I was having a conversation with somebody like 2 days ago, and I said it's just like Matthew Broderick, and then Stephanie C. Kernison. Host of Media Monkeys and Donkey Junkies, subscribe now. she wasn't the one I was having the conversation with either, but she put a thing on my Facebook about, you know, that was a quote from an episode of Buffy about, like, the difference between Broadway Matthew and Ferris Bueller Matthew. And, I was just checking to see if the fan was running.
Is it?
It may very well be. Nick, can you please turn on your damn air conditioning? I'm sweating balls. This man, I don't know what, how do you live? How do you live, Melton? It is so damn hot in this place.
Well,
I should mention we're at Nick's apartment for the first time in a while.
In a while, yeah. Maybe the first time since
the drunk episodes.
Maybe.
Wow.
Has it really? Really? I don't know.
I mean, we recorded a couple movies here. Well, maybe we recorded a conversational here in a long time. Yeah.
What I was going to say was I keep the AC turned off most of the time because I don't want to rack up a large power bill.
I understand, but it's like 97 degrees outside, and I'm fat.
Aw, no, you're not.
Yes, I
am. You are not.
Oh, boy.
There are people who are fat, and then there are people like you. I mean, like, you're a hefty fellow, but you're not, like morbidly obese.
No, I'm not. I know that. Fucking Jason Lee, sir. How My Name Is Earl ruined Jason Lee. Like, think about the Jason Lee of everything before My Name Is Earl.
That's not helpful.
okay, Jason Lee, you know, Mallrats, Chasing Amy, Dogma, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Was he Banky in Chasing Amy?
He was.
Okay.
And he was good.
He was good.
He was very good. And he, but the problem is, My Name is Earl, like, it made him so, like, because he's on that new show, Memphis Beat, that I told you about.
He's the lead, right?
Yeah, and that show is, I cannot reconcile that show, because it's an awesome idea that it's Jason Lee as, like, a Tennessee cop. But the problem is that, like, okay, there's two problems. One,
They're having him sing at night.
It's not even that they're having him sing. The character, like, is a blues singer by night. But the problem is, it's not even Jason Lee singing. Not him singing, and whoever is doing the singing for his character does not sound like someone who would come out of Jason Lee's mouth.
Right.
Was that yours?
Yeah, I don't know why it did that.
Okay. Anyway, it does not sound like anyone who could be him ever. Okay?
Well, you know, I was actually talking about that with a friend of mine, a while back. You less so, but a lot of my circle of friends now have been really getting into a TV show called Archer.
Yes. And I enjoy Archer, sir. Don't discount me.
Oh, I'm not saying you don't like it, but I mean, I have a couple of friends who are really into it, like, to an obsessive level, like I am. And I was talking to one of them, and he was talking about how when you first hear Archer's voice, you don't imagine that that would be the voice that would come out of that character design.
It's true.
Because Archer, the show is about a spy agency, and Archer is like the sort of James Bond of the spy agency. They're all hideously incompetent, but it's a comedy, so of course they are.
Yeah.
But Archer is voiced by a guy named H. John Benjamin, and
I know H. John Benjamin very well because he was the voice of Coach McGurk.
On Home Movies.
On Home Movies, yes, which is like where he became
but
most famous.
I've noticed that all of his characters sound like they have a little bit of a cold going on.
That's just John Benjamin.
Right.
Yeah.
But anyway, Archer's voice sounds nothing like the James Bond look they gave for the thing. That's really the whole point. I made it much longer and more involved than it had any right to be.
Right. But Jason Lee, the point is, like, before My Name is Earl, he had a very naturalistic, very normal acting style. And then My Name is Earl comes out, and everything becomes very big face and very expressive. And then he does the fucking Chipmunk movies, so his career is fucked. It's basically fucked.
Well, you know,
I mean, Zachary Levi was in the second album, Chipmunks. I realized that.
And Matthew Gray Gubler.
Matthew Gray Gubler was in both of them, unfortunately. But, you know.
I love Matthew Gray Gubler.
I do, too.
What do you love him for? Do you watch Criminal Minds?
I don't.
Well, that's what I'm not loving for. What do you love him for?
He was, like, the only truly great thing about 500 Days of Summer.
Oh, he was in that?
Yes.
Oh, well, awesome.
I hate that movie, but he was the one thing in that movie that never rang false to me. His character, the way he played him, it was so good. And he has this monologue in the middle of the movie that I think everyone takes away from that movie. Every hopeless romantic takes this monologue away from this movie, because it's Matthew Gray Gubler talking to this like video camera, and he's telling this story about how, like, about his dream woman, about how, like, his dream woman is a dream, but, like, how the woman he's with is better than his dream woman because she's real. And you could hear everybody in the audience going, oh, like, even now, even me, I was like, oh, God, yes. And that, I'm sure that's the monologue every lame, hopeless romantic like myself takes away from that movie. Even though that movie's a piece of shit. It's so, listen, I've said it before, I will say it again, man, I love being a turtle. But also, this movie is like, that movie, like, I don't, a lot of people, I'm sure if someone just heard me say I hated that movie, I know what their immediate reaction, knowing me, would be that I took issue with the fact that the whole movie is about how they broke up. No. They promoted that movie that way. We knew they broke up. That was the whole point. My issue has nothing to do with the actual story. It has everything to do with the end. Like I said before, I'll spoil it again. I probably said it like two different episodes at this point, but I'm going to say it a third time to drive the point home. The whole movie, Joseph Gordon-Levitt and everybody in his circle of people is all talking about, you know, how fate is bullshit and, you know, everything's random chance and you shouldn't, like, think everything is fate. And so then, of course, he dates this girl, Summer, played by Zooey Deschanel, who I'm losing more and more patience with every day. And, you know, and at the end of the movie, like, after he's finally gotten over her, he goes for, like, this job interview and there's this girl in the waiting room. And he's chatting her up, and they're having a nice chat, and this whole thing about, you know, maybe we should get lunch later, and he kind of brushes her off. because he's too busy trying to get his job. And then just before and he gets called in to go take his job interview, and as he's getting called in, he's like, he gets this feeling, and he turns around and says, "What's your name, by the way?" And she's like, "Summer." And it's like, "Oh, fuck you, movie. Fuck you."
Wasn't the girl named Summer?
Autumn, pardon me. You're right. It was Autumn. Thank you, Nick. I fucked up my own angry rant. Her name was Autumn. Fuck it.
What do you think about fate, Jeff?
Fate can eat a dick.
Do you believe in fate, though, is what I'm asking.
I used to. And then I think it's time that I could finally kind of backhandedly mention this. I just gave a relationship with the girl that got away a shot. This was going on for about the past 2 months or so, off and on, and then there was a big off at the end there. You were there for most of it. And that really, like, I spent 10 years, not just, I spent 5 years after we almost happened at my senior year of high school, and then we didn't, and then I went on to college. I spent that 5 years getting over her, because she had moved on with her life and done various things that are very, very fairly permanent. You know, they don't lend to, let's do something now.
Right.
Or ever. And then the 5 years before that was like when I was crushing on her in middle school and high school. Now I've had some time with her. Not very much time, but long enough for her to cheat on me. So that's fun. And I've, you know, if I had not grown very cynical about fate and all that horseshit before that happened, I'm definitely like, it's horseshit now.
Well, I just never believed in it to begin with, because I've never been one to hold to the belief that our lives are decided for us. You know, that's such an arrogant thing to say.
It really
like,
is,
people
actually.
People think that they're so important that whatever divine being who in some theories created the entire universe thinks that you, this little pipsqueak ant on this little backwoods planet in the middle of this backwoods galaxy, is important enough for them to control every single aspect of your lives. I think that's unbelievably arrogant, and I think it's unbelievably selfish. And I think that it infuriates me for reasons that I can't really explain, I guess. Like, I don't like the idea that people don't want to take responsibility for their actions.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's not my fault. It was God's plan. Or it was fate. It was chance.
It's horse shit.
It's horse shit. Yeah. I mean, I've been, as weird as this term is going to sound, I'm a devout atheist.
Yeah.
I've been a devout atheist my entire adult life. I was not raised Christian. I see through the bullshit. And I hate that people don't want to take responsibility for their own life. Like, what a horrible way to live. Like, on the one hand, you can dismiss the bad things that happen to you. Like, oh, it's just part of my life, and it's what God had planned for me. What about all the good things that happen to you? You can't take responsibility for those. You can't. You could just as easily brush the good things off in your life. Because,
exactly.
Like, oh, it's just God's plan.
Exactly.
I believe that human beings are on Earth as a result of millions of years of random chance and coincidence and evolution. So many things were working against us, and they just sort of worked out. And how lucky is that? I mean, by extension, I believe that life has no meaning. Because we're not part of a higher power. There's nothing controlling our destinies, so there's no meaning to why we're here. We're just here because of chance and coincidence. But I don't think that is a bad thing. I'll bet you could see where people would go with this. Like, oh, life has no meaning. I'm so sad now.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that makes life wonderful. Because as a result of chance, how unlikely it is that we would be born at all.
Yeah.
To realize that, how random and incredibly unlikely it is that we are even here on this earth at all. That, to me, is as close to a miracle as I will ever admit happens. So I think that that is the reason everyone should be out enjoying life and being good to one another and blah, blah, blah. Because there is no God. That's my take on things.
I don't know.
No sort of a rant.
Yeah.
But I thought it linked somehow.
But you know what's terrible?
What?
500 Days of Summer.
Boom!
Terrible movie. So fucking awful. Hate it so much. Her name was Autumn, is the point I was making. The girl at the end, her name is Autumn.
Then there'll be a third movie, 500 Days of Winter.
And then 500 Days of Spring, because there's a girl named Spring out there. She's probably some wacky hipster
bitch.
There's
probably a girl named Winter out there.
I'm sure there's a girl named Winter, but it was...
Winter's
girl.
Probably an emo bitch.
A girl named... But a girl named Spring?
Nah, she'd be like a sorority girl.
No, she wouldn't exist at all because no one is named Spring. Unless they decide to be really stupid in like 500 Days of Verna.
That would not make for a memorable movie title.
You know what also wouldn't make for a memorable movie title?
What?
500 Days of Summer. No, that's actually a very memorable title. That's just a piece of shit movie.
Although I like Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
I do too. I love almost everyone involved in that movie. I just wish it was a better movie and wasn't such a... And the end wasn't such a cop-out and the... And it wasn't so proud of itself, and it wasn't so damn pretentious, and if the kind of people that, like, love and worship at the feet of that movie weren't the kind of people that love and worship at the feet of that movie.
Yeah.
It's very similar to my more recent reaction to Juno.
I think that if you're going to go with an indie, like, romantic sort of comedy, you should go with a movie like Away We Go. Have you seen that?
I haven't, but I've really, really wanted to, and I still
haven't.
It's
a really good movie. The only problem it has is that it suffers from the hip dialogue syndrome.
It's because every indie romantic comedy now
but
has
this
to
isn't
have
Diablo Cody.
Shit.
It's a different kind of hip dialogue. It was written by Dave Eggers.
Who wrote the
Wild Things Are.
Yeah.
Yeah. And other things. The heartbreaking work of staggering genius.
Right.
Anyway, so the dialogue is very, like, sophisticated to, like, an unrealistic point. And not in that really charming way that, like, old 40s movies have sophisticated dialogue.
Right.
Like, in that really hipster sort of detached sort of way, really ironic and sarcastic. But apart from that, it's a really very, very good movie. Sam Mendes directed it, Maya Rudolph and John Krasinski are in it, and they're both awesome.
Yeah.
And it's worth seeing. I recommend it.
I saw the end of it on HBO one night.
I don't remember how it ends, but I think that...
It doesn't... I don't think I gave anything away.
I think that the... it's less a movie about a story than it is about the journey.
It's all about the journey, man.
Well, this movie is all about the journey, because they're going and visiting friends, because Maya Rudolph is pregnant.
Right.
And they're going and visiting friends who have families, and they're just sort of like... getting used to the family life before they start a family themselves. They're just sort of doing it like in a cross-country trip. It's like a road trip!
Yeah!
Yeah, and it's got some very poignant bits and some very funny bits, and it's just good. I recommend it.
Yeah.
But anyway...
You know, when we started recording this episode, one of my goals was that we would try to, like we did it once before, avoid pop culture entirely.
Yeah, that never really seems to work.
It never really seems to work. Even in the episode where we came the closest, which was only like a couple of weeks ago, there was still that one segment where we started talking about WWE for whatever reason.
Oh, yeah. It's just the thing with us, I mean...
It's a question I've asked so many times, and this is the kind of question that, like, it just begs, like, snarky bastards who listen to our show, or people who are just tuning in to write some bitch comment on the fucking website, which is this. Are we so uninteresting as people that all we've got is pop culture? I mean, I've asked this before, but I don't want to believe it.
I don't think so. I think that, I mean, you especially... And me, to a lesser extent. I mean, our career goals and our life goals are to be involved in these mediums.
It's true.
It's our passion in life. I think it makes us... It doesn't make us less or more interesting. It just means that we have a real interest in what we talk about. And this just happens to be one of the things we're both really interested in.
Right.
So, if people who listen to it aren't interested in pop culture... Well, they can go listen to something else.
It's true.
I mean...
But it's just like, I listened to Smodcast, and you know Smodcast was my original inspiration for all of this.
Right.
And the thing is, like, I mean, Kevin Smith and Scott Mosier, these are guys who are in the pop culture. They live in it. They are pop culture. They live in the city that makes it possible. And the thing is, all of their conversations, the vast majority of their conversations are about real shooting-the-breeze kind of shit.
They talk about sex a lot.
They talk about sex a lot, but they also...
We're not exactly that open on this show.
Not yet. But the other thing is they also talk about, like, they always find, like, interesting little news articles and things that, like... But, I mean, I'm just saying, like, I wish I had their kind of, like... And it's not... I don't think it's a testament against our friendship or the way we conduct ourselves with each other. I think it's a testament to just, like... I don't know what it is, but they have this ability to take, like, an article about something and, like, stretch it into those wacky sketches they do from time to time, where they'll just, like, go off into this place where they are acting out this scenario involving the article they read.
Well, I mean, they have experience. Kevin Smith writes movies.
It's true. And I mean, I don't mean to, like, kind of out myself, but I want you to understand that whole toughest gay in the Old West thing, that was what I was aiming for, was us to finally take that, you know, take that chain. I don't know why I chose the word chain, but I'm going to go with it. And you know, ride it. Ride the chain. Ride the chain.
That would be the tagline of the movie.
The toughest gay in the Old West. Ride the chain.
Yeah. And what would the poster be for that, do you think?
I don't know. It would be a cowboy on a pink horse.
No, it wouldn't.
Maybe it would.
Maybe it would. Ride the chain.
Although, you know, I'm just realizing, we talked about gay cowboys for all that time without once noting Brokeback Mountain. Although, I think you said this before. Was it you that said the whole thing about how it's not that they're gay cowboys, it's that they're cowboys and they're gay for each other?
Yes.
Was it you that said that?
I believe so, yeah.
It was you that said that.
I don't buy the whole gay cowboy movie thing. I remember back in college when that movie hadn't even come out yet. Like, everyone was like, gay cowboy movie with Jake Gyllenhaal and Heath Ledger. Ooh, they're hot. Gay cowboys. I'm like, even back then I was like, ugh, really?
Yeah.
Then the movie came out and everyone's like, oh, they're gay cowboys. And they still, every time people talk about that movie, they're like, oh, gay cowboys. I'm like, they have sexual relationships with women in this movie. That, by its very definition, makes them not gay.
Would you call them bisexual or just bi-curious?
I would say they're bisexual because the love of each other's life is this other man.
Right.
But they are perfectly able and willing to make their life with women as well. And the thing is, you could say, oh, they're just hiding who they are, but the movie doesn't really make a point of showing them grieving over their current life. It's just sort of like, this is part of their life, and the other part of their life is they have this big unrequited love for each other. Well, it's requited, but you know where
I know what you mean.
Like, they just have a complicated life. I mean, they have complicated lives. If one of them was really so gay that he had no attraction to women at all, which would be Jake Gyllenhaal, Heath Ledger's character would marry a woman just to conform to society, I think. But Jake Gyllenhaal is more out there than Heath Ledger's character is. He would just live alone his whole life. I think he genuinely loved the Anne Hathaway character, if not in the same way that he loves Heath Ledger.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. I think it's just silly to impose labels on people because there's no such thing as purely gay or purely straight.
I was just about to say something similar. I was going to ask you, as a proud homosexual fellow, motherfucker, whichever one you want to go with.
Motherfeller.
Yeah. You motherfeller! That's the edited version for TV.
My name is Buck, and I'm here to party. Oh.
But anyway, no, I was going to ask you if you would be okay with me saying that I was going to... I've thought this for a long... Especially since I discovered this very gay part of me. The thing is, like, I've been wondering, isn't everyone just bisexual?
Yeah, I think that... I mean, I'm certainly no expert. I haven't done any research or anything, but I think that
I feel like everyone is bisexual. It's just to the extent of which direction they go.
Right, and I do think there are people who are either completely one thing or completely one way with nothing in between. I think that there are too many people in the world for that to not be the case.
Right.
But I think that the majority of people have at least some point in their lives been attracted to someone of the same sex or gender or whatever.
We've seen that a lot in me in the past couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, like, it doesn't mean you're necessarily going to act on it, and it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to last forever, but sexuality is too fluid, I think, to, you know, assign a specific definitive label. I mean, I call myself gay because that's the best way I have to describe myself. I'm not just going to go around going, I like men. Sometimes, most times, you know, that's a weird
men most times are sexual, yeah.
Most times, I mean, if we're going to be honest, I am about as gay as a gay guy can really be. I mean, I have absolutely no attraction to women.
You're speaking solely on like the definition. You're not talking about like you're so gay. You're gay,
right? I'm talking about the definition of gay. I mean, like
you don't mean gay. You
know,
what
I mean it's just I have no attraction to women, like none. I mean, I experimented a little bit in college, but it didn't really do too much for me. there's a time and place for everything.
I love
children,
that phrase,
and it's called college. I mean, you know, that's what you do in college. I mean, you get the chance. I mean, it's not so much that it's college stereotypes that you get the chance to in college. You don't really get a chance to do that kind of shit before when you're living with your parents.
It's true, you don't.
I mean, that's what college is for. You branch out a little bit, and I wouldn't really do it again. It's not.
I wish I had gotten the opportunity to. I never got to, actually.
I mean, like, it's just one of those things. You know, I tried it and it didn't really do much for me, and you know, I don't regret it, but I'm not planning on doing it again. You learn a little more about yourself when you do that.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's that.
I've had a very boring college career when it comes to that sort of thing.
Oh, well, my college career was pretty boring too.
Mine has been mostly entirely based on the drama of how utterly poorly governed the University of Choice is, and all the different ways they have almost gotten rid of me because of stupid financial aid snafus on their part, or just their own, like, fine print that they never tell anyone about. Just all their stupid shit that has almost gotten me kicked off campus for over the past 4.5 years or so.
Well, I mean, in my personal experience, college wasn't really that exciting for me either. I didn't go to very many parties. I mean, the number of parties I went to in college could be counted on probably one hand out of 4 years.
So right.
That's not really saying too much. I didn't drink until my sophomore year.
I didn't drink until it was legal for me to drink.
Exactly. I mean, like, I'm debating how much of this I should say on air, but I guess it doesn't really matter.
Not really.
Well, let's see. I guess the backstory of this is I was pretty repressed in high school. In high school, I was totally one to go completely by the books and not break any rules.
Right.
And therefore, I didn't break any rules in high school. When I got to college, also in high school, I was pretty repressed sexually as well. Like, I wasn't open about it with anybody. It wasn't something I talked about that much. I mean, my friends knew, and my family in the later part of high school knew, but It wasn't the same thing as being out and open about it, and I didn't get out and open about it until I got to college, so that was a big step. And once I'd done that, it was easier to open up about other things, you know. When I was a sophomore, I finally started drinking, which is way later than a lot of other people my age, who were either started drinking in high school or went right to it when they got to college.
Right.
I mean, I was 20 when I started drinking, so that wasn't very much long to go left until I turned 21. Only a couple of months until I turned 21. So really not... I could have just kept waiting, you know. It was just... Why not, you know? At that point, I felt I was responsible enough to handle it. I didn't lose my virginity until I was 22, which is way later than a lot of people my age. And, like, a lot of people I know either lost it in high school or very early college. So, I mean, that's not completely unreasonable. I remember having a conversation with my mom. She was like, you can lose your virginity at 18. I'm like, why are you telling me this? You're my mother.
That is a strange conversation.
Well, my mother has always sort of felt that because we're so close about most things, that we can be close about this too. But my general reaction to that is, this is part of my life that I don't want you involved with.
Yeah.
She doesn't... I don't think she's really caught on to that yet, but maybe she has.
I mean, it's not like you're Hoyt Fortenberry. True yeah. Blood segue. Boom.
I like Hoyt.
Me too. But you know what else I like?
What?
True Blood.
True Blood is such a great show.
I realize that we're getting close to the hour mark, and I hope I didn't interrupt you in a really key place.
Well, no, the story was just going to be how I've kept breaking out of my shell. A lot of it, most of it, I mean, there was a great deal of growth in college, but there's been a great deal of growth since college. So, I mean...
And you're not just talking about my dick.
I'm not. although I was for part of it. No, I wasn't.
No. Well, you know, True Blood, though.
True Blood was something I didn't experience until after college.
And that is something that I have only discovered for the very first time. I mean, I knew about it, and I didn't, like, have disdain towards it. I respected it on principle, and I was intrigued by it. And then last week, it's only been last week, I got a wild hair at my ass, went to the school video store, and checked out the first season, like, day by day, and... As of last night, it's only been like 2 weeks, I am now caught up to where they are in the third season.
I'm still mighty impressed. I saw True Blood for the first time with a couple of friends.
Boom, boom, boom. Muffins.
The town?
The town. A town. It's not this town, but it's A town.
Yeah.
You can bleep it out if you want.
I will.
With boom, boom, boom. Muffins.
I will.
In the town with a couple of friends of mine, and... We watched the entire first season in 24 hours, or less. It had to have been less.
Yeah.
And I got hooked on it, and I watched season two at a bit more restrained pace, but loved it, loved it, loved it, and we now get together every week to watch the season threes.
Yeah.
And it's such a good show.
God, it's awesome.
My mom doesn't care for it, but I don't really understand why. I mean, she loves all these other HBO shows, so it can't be the profanity of the sex.
I'm just excited about it for a couple of reasons. One, the fact that you know, I've talked about this before. I've always wanted to have an HBO show to love. Because it's fucking HBO, you know?
Yeah.
And the thing is, I had Big Love for a little while, but it just, Big Love never really got me the way this show did. Big Love is interesting, and it's kind of fun on occasion, but this show is just a fucking jam and a half.
Oh, it's awesome.
Like, it's, oh my god, like, I'm addicted. Like, last night, I told you, I was up till 4 a.m. last night. Making sure I'd seen everything.
Right. Did you see the little mini-sodes?
I haven't seen the mini-sodes. I watched Jessica's video blogs, though.
She has video blogs?
Jessica has video blogs.
You should probably explain who Jessica is.
Jessica Hamby is a baby vampire, they call him. She's only 17, which kind of makes my feelings for her a bit gross.
Yeah, but she's going to live forever, so...
It's true, so she might as well be like 100.
Yeah.
It's true. Which is gross in a human sense, but she's a vamp.
Right.
And she's adorable. Oh my god.
You have a thing for redheads.
Gingers, sir. We've had this discussion before. Redheads is something you say to disrespectful. Gingers is something about love.
Well, I would argue the opposite, because normally when people in America say gingers, they mean it mockingly.
I don't.
As if on South
And
Park.
You should know me well enough to know that that's not the case.
I know, I'm just saying. For the sake of argument.
But I am just saying... You know, Doctor Who, the fifth season ended like 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago?
2 weeks, I'd honestly.
And the thing is, now that Doctor Who is off the air until the Christmas special and then the sixth season next year, I've got nothing to do. I've got no show to obsess over. I've got no Amy Pond. I love Amy Pond. You know I do. I adore her. Oh my god, Amy Pond. But... she's front, but spoiler, I actually can't even say this because there are listeners to this show, I can't finish that sentence. There are people who listen to this show who haven't finished season 5 or even seen season 5 yet.
Yeah.
God, that sucks. It really sucks.
Well, tonight, BBC America should be airing The Lodger.
Well, I know, but I'm talking about people we know personally. I'm doing this for their sake. I'm not going to spoil anything about Amy Pond. But the point is, she is a ginger. And she's adorable, and as I've made very apparent on this show over the past couple of months, I was dangerously obsessed with her. Not dangerously, wonderfully obsessed. You were there for a lot of it.
I was.
It was so fun, and I mean, I still adore her, but she's not around right now, and I needed something else. And then Jessica
came along.
Yes.
She's quite great.
Oh.
She was really obnoxious when they first introduced the character.
I still adore her.
She grew on me very quickly.
Oh my god! Not to shortchange Sookie Stackhouse though.
Sookie.
Basically,
whenever she comes on screen, my first response is to laugh and say, "Oh, Anna Paquin."
I can't do that. I never did. And here's the thing: like, you would think that would be my immediate response because of fucking like X-Men and Fly Away Home and shit. No, it's just Sookie.
I keep expecting him to walk through the door and say, "Sookie."
Oh my god.
That's got to be kind of weird, though. I mean, Anna Paquin and Stephen Moyer are actually in a relationship. Are they engaged now?
I'm pretty sure they're married, actually, at this point.
Really?
Yeah.
I would have said just engaged, but anyway...
I could have sworn it was one of those situations where, like, I knew they were engaged, like, about a year ago, and then I feel like just one random weekend a couple of weeks ago, I heard they got married.
Well, in any case, they play the love interests on the show.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of weird, being actually married to the person that you're playing the person
you're
in love with.
I think that's
banging. It's got to add a sense of authenticity to their performances.
Yeah.
Like, when they're going at it, and they go at it a lot.
There's
a lot of sex on that show.
There's so much sex in, which is another reason why I love that show.
You should watch Rome. They are in the bed all
the
time.
Yeah, but see, there's a difference between the sexing on Rome and the sexing on True Blood. And even without having seen Rome, I can say what I'm about to say, I think. Rome is more about, you know, the bacchanal of Rome. Just everyone just fucking because it's Rome and everyone's muddy and dirty and Roman.
Not really. It's more like the nobles and stuff in their little palaces.
Right, but it's like I'm fucking you because you're royal. versus I'm fucking you because I fucking love you.
Right.
Which is basically, which is the majority of the sex on this show, let's be frank. I mean,
right.
I mean, that's one thing that I kind of dig about this show is the fact that, like, the majority of the time when people are fucking, it's because they have this very deep connection, which I think is fantastic. The moments of, like, random sex, most of which involving Jason Stackhouse, because he's a total man slut.
He is. Like, not so much now.
Not so much now, but he used to be, like, every 5 minutes he was in the sack with somebody.
And who wouldn't want to see Ryan Quantin naked all the time?
He's a dreamy fella. There's no denying it. I'll tell you who I've taken a shine to, though, of the men on that show.
Eric? No.
Actually, a little bit on Eric, but I think I'm stricken by Sam Merlotta.
I was going to guess Sam next.
I don't know what it is, but there's something...
You know, the thing with Sam was that I didn't have much of an attraction to Sam. And then in season two, there's this scene where he's packing up his truck for a reason I won't say to people who haven't watched the show, but he, like, turns around on the steps up to his restaurant, and they're like, ooh. And so after that little ooh moment, it's like every time he comes on screen, I'm like, okay, I get it.
There's just something about him, like, he's just, like, he's a nurturer caretaker, which is totally a thing that I go for.
Oh, Sam Merlot.
It's very intriguing.
How did you love the end of season two? We were discussing the character of Marianne.
We don't need to say much more beyond that.
Well, no, I was just wondering what your reaction was. What did you find the payoff?
The thing that happened with her?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, yes!
Well, I mean, like, because I mean, you could say this about any TV season, but did you feel the build-up to the finale was worth it?
Oh, perfect.
I loved it. I think season two is way better than season one.
I think here's the thing about True Blood that I kind of wanted to mention with you is the fact that that show, like, that will never be a show that I will ever be able to just pull out a random episode and watch. But I appreciate that.
Right.
It's not like Buffy where they would do a random one-off episode every now and again. It's an ongoing story.
Well, most HBO shows are like that.
Well, I know, but stories. Like, there's no like I'm just saying there would never be a one single episode I would just pull out.
Right.
Because it is all one big, massive
fucking
story.
If you had a hankering to watch True Blood, you'd have set aside time to watch the season.
I would. I mean, although I'm telling you right now, I'm so high off the show, I could watch all the seasons in a row as they go over and over for days. I could watch
it. It is that good.
It's so fucking good. And you know, you would think that I would have an adversity to it because of my hatred for Twilight.
Right.
Which to a lot of people, that's their immediate reaction when you think about True Blood, is that it's just, you know...
Vampires, thus Twilight.
Exactly. Yeah. No, it's not. It's
the anti-Twilight.
It really fucking is, sir. And it's...
It has the bite that Twilight completely and utterly lacks.
And the intelligence, and the quality, and the good, and the not suck.
Yeah. Oh, they do a lot of
stuff. I mean, they suck a lot, but...
Well, I mean, the thing is, the reason it's the anti-Twilight is because the whole point of Twilight is abstinence is good. No, they're fucking all the time on True Blood.
Oh, God, yes.
They're vampires, so when they bite your neck, there is blood, and it is gross. There's a lot of gross blood on this show. They don't shy away from it. The vampires don't fucking sparkle in the sunlight.
Oh, God, they don't.
No. And there was another reason, too, that I was going to bring up why it was the anti-Twilight. I don't remember. Oh, yes, it's smartly written.
Yeah.
Except for the books. The books are terrible.
You grab me some excerpts from the Sookie Stackhouse books, and they are... pretty awful.
Really badly written. Yeah. If I had it with me, I would read my standard two sentences that I read for people. All I have to do is take out the first book and read half of the first paragraph, and that immediately turns everybody I've read it to off from the books because it's just so badly written.
Although I have to say, the way you read it and what I remember of it felt very fried green tomatoes, which, you know,
well, it is Southern.
Yeah. I'm just saying I love fried green tomatoes.
Well,
sir.
I haven't read the book, but the movie's awesome.
I'm glad you said that. You know, a lot of people would scoff at that, but I'm glad you appreciate... I love that movie. I love it.
Yeah, now here are the books pretty good, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Fanny Flagg.
Fanny Flagg, who was a panelist on Match Game back in the day.
I knew she was on TV.
Yeah, yeah.
I just couldn't remember what it was she did.
I don't know if she did anything outside of being a panelist on Match Game. I just know that's what she did for most of the time.
Right.
Well, that's the OUP for this week. I'm Jeff Heatherly.
I'm Nick Melton.
Go experience 7 days. Good night. There were three other Buzz Fightchins before Buzz Fightchins the fourth. I'd like to meet all of them and shake their hands because their names
are Buzz Fightchins. Buzz Fightchins the second. Buzz Fightchins the third. And finally, Buzz Fightchins the fourth.
You really kept that one alive.
Yeah.